This is the Saxo Market Call, daily insights on what is moving the financial markets.
Hello and welcome to the Saxo Market Call. It is Friday, 5th of August, 2022, and we have markets still in a very complacent mood with a further rally yesterday, and we have to wonder where this could end up. We'll be talking about that in a little bit, but certainly it's quite interesting to see this. It seems almost as if the market is saying recession is a good thing. We got crude oil prices going lower, hopes for demand keeping prices low there, as well as some positive or some bearish, if you will, for the price. Supply news, Libya, etc. In any case, another good day, and we have to wonder where this can stop. I would say some next levels to look at to the upside. This 13,000 level is quite key in NASDAQ 100. We broke through that. There is a big level in the S&P 500 coming up, by the way, around 41.77 in the cash index, which was a major prior pivot high, the one that we've actually cleared here in the NASDAQ 100. But it really does look like, Peter, at least to a degree, that this NASDAQ 100, those interest rate sensitive stocks, really enjoying this hope for apparent hope for a soft landing as yields look fairly sideways here.
Yeah, we're getting another 9 and almost 10% rally in e-commerce stocks and bubble stocks. So, and payments up 7% for the month. Next gen medicine up 7%. So it's continuing with this momentum. And as you rightly say, I mean, we have interest rates coming down a little bit yesterday together with oil. It's just boosting sentiment here in the short term. But I think you sometimes have to zoom out a little bit and see the big picture because you can get stuck in the noise. And I still think that if you look at the deglobalization trend, the US versus China, you look at the war in Ukraine, you look at all these issues and massive energy crisis in Europe, we have so many issues that could still suddenly change things quite a bit. And I think we are just in this, we're just at this very inflection point where everyone agrees that things have come down. The economy has slowed down, but is it going to be a soft landing or is there something suddenly that makes things spark? And then it rolls over into a much more nasty recession. I think it's a big open question. I don't think we are much wiser until a couple of months from now.
Yeah, or especially once we get to the other side of an illiquid month like August back into the fall markets. And just to draw some parallels with past markets, it's actually quite interesting to track something like where we are in the cycle and this drawdown. And you've put up this great chart that I asked you to refresh for today's slide deck. You can jump forward to slide 5 and have a look at it. So the current drawdown being that sort of thick blue or teal line, whatever you want to call it there, and how it tracks, I think most interestingly relative to the 2007 to 2009 cycle, which is that dark gray drawdown level. And calling back then, where were we in the cycle? Well, that's big rally you see there back then in 2008 was in May, not long after the March, I believe it was, Bear Stearns, where it was sort of shuffled off to JP Morgan. And the market's like, okay, the Fed has put out the fires. We've got the worst actor. This was their punishment for LTCM. Everything's going to be hunky-dory from here. And technically, a couple of interesting things. So that rally took us close to the 61.8% retracement of the entire drawdown from the top in October of 2007. But it was also sort of tickling around the 200-day moving average. So if we are going to get something of similar magnitude, that actually would fit with the S&P actually continuing higher to something like 43.39. Now, that is not a call. I'm just saying the sort of the craziness and complacency can continue here if there's no new spark, as you said, Peter. But I think we would emphasize, both of us, and I know Stein Jakobsen, our chief investment officer, also believes that we're nowhere near the end of this cycle. As well, historically, the market tends to start really getting into a bear market if this is one of the bigger bear markets of the last, let's call it, many decades. Once the economy is really rolling over and once the Fed is actually starting to ease and is trying to catch up with the power of the recession and the implications of that recession. That's historically what's happened.
Yeah, and that's actually why I think the light green, and we're still on slide 5, by the way, I think the light green, which is the 73-74 bear market, I think is super interesting, because in the run up to that last leg down, you actually had the economy, if you look at the Chicago Fed National Activity Index, it was actually still posting very strong growth numbers. So the economy was growing above trend. You had a galloping energy crisis, but it wasn't really visible to a lot of people, and then suddenly something snapped, and then what happened is that you took the final leg down around 20% more. So I think it's really something to have in mind that things can be very strong for quite a while, but still the weakness is building underneath the
You
surface.
had the oil Arab oil embargo of like 73, and you had the whole crisis around the politics of Nixon and Watergate. There was a pretty low moment for the US, and we've certainly seen similar types of sparks here already with this Russia invasion of Ukraine, etc. And let's rewind as well to where I think the market is most complacent, and we've looked at that as well, where we are with inflation, forward forecasts and swaps predicting that we are seeing transitory inflation. We will get back to normalcy within a couple of years. And this was emphasized really in yesterday's Bank of England meeting, where they have a very dire outlook in terms of the economy, looking for a recession to start in Q4 of this year and lasting 5 quarters. It's pretty rare for a central bank to wax so explicitly bearish on the outlook for the economy. They did so while trying to maintain credibility that they will hike as necessary to get their inflation back to 2%, even though they're predicting it will peak at 13%. Sometime in Q4 of this year, and still be at something like 9.5% as late as Q3 of next year. But magic things happen, apparently, Peter. And this is a rainbow and unicorn, a rainbows and unicorns future we have, as we'll be back below target within a couple of years.
Wow.
We disagree with that view, but what's important, of course, is what the market thinks and how the market reacted. And if you look at it, it's kind of interesting. Slide three, I show what the 2 year rates did. They were all over the map because it was a pretty dramatic forecast in the economy. Trying to mark down the sort of the forward moves from the Bank of England from where they were, but that actually got erased by the end of the day, pretty much unchanged. So still looking generally for approaching 50 basis points at the next two meetings, and that was a relatively hawkish outcome relative to the price action in sterling, which settled quite a bit lower, as you can see on the right with euro sterling. But I don't really see support for a big euro sterling extension higher here, at least not from a rate spread perspective. And because the Bank of England is expected to do poorly, there could be other reasons. We could go risk off, concerns about structural deficits, etc., hitting UK worse than other areas. That's to me a fair source of concern for sterling. I think sterling will do poorly if we pivot and risk sentiment. But from rates perspective, this was a relative non-event.
Yeah, my thinking on all of this is that it's not a big surprise that the Bank of England is doing this inflation prediction 2 years into the future at around the 2% level. And I suspect the Fed and the ECB will do something similar, because I think the minute they come out with a forecast that is let's say 3.5%, maybe 3 years into the future.
Well, why don't they just say, I have no idea?
But exactly, but
But
that's very
they can't.
that
They
will be
can't
the
tell us.
humbleness. I think they're really afraid that if they say that, either that or they put out like say 3.5%, that the inflation expectations suddenly become unanchored. So I think they're climbing to the, they sorry they're clinging to this narrative that we will get back there. And if their prediction turns out to be wrong, they can always say, oh well, this exogenous shock happened, whatever, price shock to food
Yeah,
or something happened in
Russia,
Asia.
Ukraine, in
Yeah,
the case of
exactly.
yesterday's
So
Bailey press conference, he was pointing to that, etc. Yeah, good, great points. Okay, we have a this big package still trying to wend its way through the Senate in the U.S. with the, it's not a done deal because all 50 Democrats need to sign on, and Vice President Kamala Harris needs to cast the deciding vote. So the latest to weigh in is Arizona Senator Sinema, who has made some changes to the package so far. And it's an interesting one, Peter, because it's this switch away from the carried interest provision that was in the original form of the bill and looking at a tax on buybacks, which is quite interesting. And curiously, I found it was looked at raising a pretty decent amount of money. So take us through it. I think it's a 1% buyback tax. Does that mean on the amount of the buyback in total rather than a, I don't know. I was surprised at the numbers.
I think the details are a little bit unclear at this point. I think the main takeaway, something we need to understand, is that the US equity market has fundamentally operated in a very different way than the European equity market in the past 20 years. So if you look at the slide four, you can see what is called the index divisor between the MSCI Europe index, which is the light blue. The dark blue is the S&P 500. So when the index divisor increases in an index, it's because the shares in the index from the companies, there's a net issuance. And then the index divisor goes up over time. And that's exactly what you happen. And what you expect from a normal equity market is that the index divisor go up, because you use the equity market as a funding source, right? That's
Right.
why you use public markets. And the US and the European equity market was following in lockstep from 1995 to 2004. And around that area, Sorry, time point, things changed for the US. It hit the peak, hit a peak, and it has gone down ever since. And we know buybacks have been a major source of buying in natural flows in the market, but also used as an efficient way of returning capital to shareholders. But it's, yeah, you have a point.
But I'm sorry, I didn't mean to
No,
interrupt you, but this also means that they're generally leveraging up their balance sheets. So a company like Apple, which has absolutely no need to issue debt, issues massive amounts of debt. And of course, it's not in any trouble in any way in terms of its debt ratios, but it uses debt to fund buybacks, and therefore they've leveraged themselves up.
yeah, exactly. And a lowered index divisor also artificially props up the earnings per share figures, which is a natural thing that a lot of people are looking at. Oh, it's it, they if it, that's the narrative all the time, that the US has a very strong earnings per share growth relative to Europe, but something is called earnings per share, but there's also the aggregate net income that is generated. And I just think that it's something you need to have on the radar, because tax rates and changes to these things can obviously impact US equities.
Changes to interest rates as well, of course,
Yes.
challenging when they need to roll that debt that they've leveraged up to do the buybacks. Very interesting, of course, as the cycle plays out. Okay, in the FX market, really not much to add here. Slide six, you can see the latest trend reading, so it's kind of bogging down. Look at the euro dollar popping back higher yesterday with these the latest somewhat elevated initial jobless claims figure in the US, the weekly one at 260K, the highest for the cycle. People trying to shape up their view for maybe a week, some weaker US data. So euro dollar keeping within that range. We're waiting for resolution there. I have a hard time seeing being a big fan of buying the euro, but certainly there could be a short squeeze higher if we see more complacency, if we see weak US data. We could see an upside squeeze into challenging the higher resistance above, well above 103. But let's see how the US, what the quality of the US data is, and then, of course, how the market reacts to that. And then, my final point on that front, we looked at the comparison, comparing the household survey to the establishment survey yesterday. So, the household survey being the one used to calculate the unemployment rate, which has been stagnating, going sideways for a few months, whereas the establishment survey, the one with that is a part of the non-farm payrolls change, has shown pretty consistent job gains. That's expected at a decent further. Quarter of a million jobs added for the month. But let's see what that one is. It's one of the most statistically manipulated data points. Gets far too much attention. But another one's very interesting is the latest average hourly earnings print. And I've compared that on slide seven with the Atlanta Fed median wages, which continued to go vertical in June. We don't have the July data yet there. I'm not sure when they do that release. It's not one of the ones that they put on the economic calendar, but something to keep an eye on there. Wages advancing at 6.7%, according to that measure, relative to what looks like a stagnating average hourly earnings series around 5%. So I think it'll be interesting to see more, a big surprise, especially to the upside on the average hourly earnings, if that's what we get. But let's have a look at that later today. Okay, Peter, I'm going to put it back over to you for equity market focus as we're wondering where this. Where all this, this big squeeze is gonna top out.
Good question, John. In the stocks to watch today, I've just highlighted three that might be of interest on slide eight. So Allianz here in Europe, it was actually quite a good result from for Q2, but there's a lot of losses in their bond funds, of course, because of the high interest rates that hit all the bond funds. And the shares are trending a little bit lower. I'm a little bit surprised about that. I can't add much other color to this at this point. Coinbase, I think, was the big story in the equity market yesterday. I know a lot of retail investors like to talk about Tesla, and that the general shareholders general meeting approved the stock split, and it opens up, of course, the doors for more people to invest, because the share price will be lowered because of that. But I don't think that's an interesting story, because it doesn't change the company's value or what the company is doing. But Coinbase, I think this is a huge story. They are partnering up with BlackRock to make it easier for institutional investors to invest in Bitcoin and also manage their risk. They're opening up their Aladdin system. So for those of you out there that don't know what the Aladdin system is, it's probably the most advanced and sophisticated risk management system that really have been pioneered by BlackRock, and it's used by central banks. It's used by a lot of big institutional investors to manage multiple sources of risk and multi-asset portfolios on a broad basis. And you can do scenario analysis, a lot of things. And for crypto or Bitcoin to be pulled into this system and can be used, and BlackRock probably will begin to promote this thing, I think is a huge deal. To play devil's advocate, we talked about it. So BlackRock is running around trying to sell CNY bonds, as I talked the other day, right? And a lot of ins and they have got a lot of AUM into that. I just wonder whether this,
When you say CNY bonds, just for clarity, the Chinese yuan
yes, local
denominated
currency,
local
yes,
bonds, yeah.
exactly. And now they're also doing this with crypto. I'm just wondering whether this is actually maybe a sign that BlackRock is saying, okay, we probably have been in, we have reached the end of the line of how much growth we can squeeze out of the passive trade and ETFs, and we're now moving into other funnels of growth and money. And I think maybe that's a signal. I'm just speculating here, but it's I think it's a little an odd move
Sign of
for.
desperation, maybe at the margin.
Yeah, maybe. We can only speculate, of course. And then the Block, one of the big companies within the payments industry, the shares were down almost 10% in the extended trading. The gross margin, sorry, gross payment volume missed, and their net revenue was down 6%. They were clubbed almost in half on their operating earnings, so very bad. And then to end up, sorry, to end this spiel on earnings on slide nine. I don't want to really mention the earnings today. They're so boring. And maybe unless you really think that it's very sexy to talk about Canadian natural resources, it's a great company and they will post a great result, but it's just not a very interesting company, I think. But I've put in a chart here to the right hand side of the slide deck on slide nine, the quarterly earnings in the MSCI World Index. And as you can see here, we have hit a new all-time high. So in the nominal world, inflation works in the sense that it gives you the illusion of growth, right? So I expect, and we have seen that revenue growth and apparently also now earnings are accelerating. And I think I've talked about it before. So when you go back and look at the 70s, earnings growth was way, way, way above trend growth, the long-term trend growth in earnings. So that's the magic, so to speak, of inflation. And we talked about it yesterday, John, the stagflation, right? The illusion of growth, but in reality, there is no growth. It doesn't really improve your living standards.
And the 10% interest rates at the time killed the multiples. So the markets were often not doing very well. And in sort of nominal terms, if you don't consider dividends, which of course were massive back then because of high interest rates, 1982 was something like a 28-year low in nominal terms for the index. But what we have here is the magical world where inflation is going to normalize to sub 2% within 2 years,
Of course.
Peter. So we have longer term interest rates, which are still very, very low. And the real rates, therefore, not terribly high at all. In fact, they're extremely negative. So, yeah, there of course things are where they are for a reason, and it will of course take to some degree the market's forecast of inflation and unanchoring of these inflation expectations for this to change. But yeah, let's see how that develops. Let's see what the data does today. I think non-farm payrolls and the employment report is so overrated as a macro input. It's a lagging data point, but it does. People recognize that it's important, so it sort of becomes its own psychological factor, and it just simply needs to be gotten out of the way for some people to put their trading and investing capital to work in the markets. But we could still get some interesting signals from today's data. It's respected, of course, and remember that we are in an illiquid month of August for another few weeks here. All right, that is a wrap for today and for this week. Have a wonderful weekend. Stay very careful out there, and we'll be back Monday with the next Saxo Market Call.
Thanks for listening. This has been the Saxo Market Call. For feedback and questions, reach out to us on Twitter at Saxo Market Call or by email, marketcall@saxobank.com.